Rob Lowe, Kimberly Williams, The Christmas Shoes. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Justin Soule, Allison White, Matthew Christofferson, and Christopher Flowers. Read by Gailey Heidemann.
I know most people decorate grave sites on Memorial Day, but my mother loved Christmas.
A dark-haired man carries a wreath to a cemetery.
Regardless of the weather, every Christmas, I made my way to the cemetery and decorated her stone.
A younger man stands before a headstone.
Hey.
The dark-haired man approaches a nearby grave. More titles. Max Morrow, Maria Del Mar, Hugh Thompson, Dorian Harewood, Shirley Douglas, music by Lawrence Schrag.
Forgot how cold it could get up here.
You're not from around here?
The younger man shakes his head.
Moved away a long time ago.
The dark-haired man nods. More titles. Edited by Drake Silliman, ACE.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Based upon the book by Donna Van Leer. The dark-haired man sets his wreath down against a headstone.
If we're open to it, the smallest of miracles can change our lives. A laughing child. The car that needs fixing. Even a pair of shoes.
He looks off wistfully.
I didn't even know I needed a miracle until it happened.
Teleplay by Wesley Bishop.
It was about 15 years ago.
Now in a girl's bedroom.
What did I do
to deserve such a great kid? She's incredible. 50 times smarter than I am. Talented. Cleans her room.
His daughter grins from her bed.
Even likes school.
So, I guess this means you won't be coming to my concert tonight.
I'm coming this time.
Maybe you shouldn't come.
What are you talking about?
I feel kind of queasy.
He holds his hand on her forehead.
You feel fine. Why don't you sleep a few more minutes?
Dad, when you come tonight, bring flowers.
He checks his tie in a mirror.
You bet.
He leaves the room smiling and enters the kitchen where a blonde woman pours a cup of coffee.
Robert, you want breakfast?
No, I'm late. Hey, guess what?
What?
You remember that big Victorian house on by Madison Hill you were drooling over?
He displays the flyer.
I salivate. You drool.
For sale.
It's a big commitment.
It's got four fireplaces. Four.
You are coming tonight, right?
Everyone is testing me today.
Well, pick up some roses, and please don't wait till the last minute.
I've got a bunch of farmers who are trying to keep their irrigation water running. That's the big case I'm on now.
Speak to the farmers, isn't it?
Dean gets all the corporate, Tom gets the real estate, and I get stuck talking to a bunch of guys on tractors about their short-nosed suckerfish.
They're senior partners. They get what they want.
I'm better than what they give me, and I work too hard.
He pulls some papers from his briefcase.
Go ahead and print up these new resumes for you. We're going to need you back in the workforce if we're moving to Madison Hill.
I think Lily is used to having me at home.
Yeah, but we agreed you were going to pursue it.
I said I'd think about it, right?
Robert looks away and nods.
Yeah.
He kisses her cheek, then retrieves his briefcase.
All right. See you tonight.
Okay.
As Robert leaves, more titles appear, directed by Andy Wolk. Later, a sign over a storefront reads, Mimi's Coffee Shop. Robert exits, sipping from a paper cup, and approaches a car parked along the sidewalk. A mail truck speeds by, and a shoebox tumbles from its open back door. A pair of red brocade pumps topples onto the asphalt.
Hey!
As the truck continues down the street, Robert picks up the shoes and waves one in the air.
Hey!
The truck disappears over a hill. Robert lowers his arm and turns around, eyeing one of the shoes.
Not my style.
He replaces the shoes in their box and sets it on the passenger seat of his car. Now on a residential street covered with fallen leaves, a curly-haired woman and a preteen boy play football.
Ready? Hey. Got it! Go, go, go!
Deeper. Hit me! Come on!
Deeper. Deeper.
Throw the ball!
Okay, I'm open!
Okay, here, ready?
Hit me! Come on!
As the woman throws the ball, it hits Robert's passing car. He stops.
I'm so sorry.
Joe Montana, you want to watch me throwing that?
I was just trying to teach my son how to throw a spiral.
Fingers on the laces. A lot of wrist.
As Robert drives off, the woman smiles at her son.
Okay, let's get breakfast. You gotta get to school.
Right!
Oh, boy. Okay.
She lags behind as her son runs to their house.
Come on, Mom. What's taking you so long? Hustle!
Go, go, go!
Later in their kitchen, the boy brings in a newspaper.
Okay, so open it up to the classifieds. Jack.
A man wearing blue coveralls enters.
Here you are.
She hands him a plate of pancakes and bacon.
Should have it. Let's see.
Check. Now, if you ever wanted a part-time job as a short order cook, you'd make a fortune.
Thanks.
Oh, here, Mom. I got it.
We're not getting a dog. No way.
His wife and son watch him chew his food.
Honey, you have any more butter?
Why not? Why can't I? You had a dog when you were a kid.
That's a good point.
Well, that helps.
Are we poor?
No, we just don't have a lot of money.
We got everything we need.
Well, I need a puppy. Why can't I have one?
Oh. Why? One second.
Mom? I don't know, honey.
Jack carries in a fishbowl.
Okay. Remember our friend the goldfish?
A half dozen dead fish float inside.
Been floating belly up for over 2 weeks.
Jack continues eating.
Well, I didn't want to bury him.
Yeah?
Sorry.
You finish all your homework?
Most of it.
Oh, is that what the teacher said? Do most of it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Go to school?
Okay.
As Jack cuts his food, his gaze moves to the fishbowl.
Things stink.
Later, his wife follows him out the front door.
Don't you think we could at least talk about a dog?
Oh, honey, he's so irresponsible.
He's a little boy.
Well, little boys need to be responsible.
You know, your mother says he's exactly like you were at his age, and I think you turned out all right.
She gives him a kiss.
My mother said that?
Yeah.
Jack climbs behind the wheel of a blue pickup truck, and his wife hands him a lunch bag through the open window.
Look, any word from the doc?
No news. So what?
Hey.
What about?
You okay? What?
The puppy.
Oh, that's a dirty trick.
What about it?
It's not funny at all.
I'll talk later.
Bye.
I love you.
As he drives off, she blows him a kiss and waves. Later in town, he parks in front of a sign that reads, Andrew's Auto Repair. A matching logo appears on the driver's side door of his truck. Jack climbs out, lunch bag in hand, and approaches a bearded mechanic in a garage.
Hey, boss.
Carl, how you doing? I was thinking maybe if I put in a cappuccino machine, I would bring in more customers.
If it helps.
Carl, you know what a cappuccino is?
An Italian sports car.
We got no Italian sports cars here. We got a bunch of heaps, huh? Let's get to work.
Now in a classroom.
A pair of magical shoes. Every night, the little girl put on her special shoes and ran through the woods, dancing magically all night long. But each morning, when she awoke from her dream, the shoes were gone, and she still couldn't walk.
Jack's son throws a wad of paper at a classmate.
Nathan, come up here.
As the shaggy-haired boy walks to the head of the class, his mother shoots him a scolding glance.
Why don't you finish the story?
Okay.
Nathan takes a storybook from his teacher.
Finally, one morning, the girl awoke and told her mother the dream. She lay in bed, unmoving, and said, I don't want to dream anymore. Why? Her mother asked. Because I'm tired of dancing alone, the little girl said. But you never dance alone, said her mother. You are dancing with angels.
His mother holds a tissue to her nose. Nathan, his teacher, and his classmates all stare at her.
I'm sorry. I used to have a pair of shoes just like that. I know it sounds corny, but whenever I put them on and I danced, it was just wonderful.
Well, was anyone else moved by this story besides Ms. Andrews?
No.
Hey, don't forget to finish your art project. And on pain of death, do not forget the concert tonight,
oh,
okay?
Oh, yes, choir members, remember, half hour early. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Bye.
The students file out.
Hey, you know, if you finish your degree, you can get a real job here,
no,
Maggie.
No, I like volunteering, especially in music.
Yeah, but the pay stinks.
Well, we just can't afford me going back to school right now. Maybe in a couple years.
Well, you can have my job.
Oh, Dalton, you say that every year.
Next year, I'll be in Florida.
What are you going to do there?
Get some peace and quiet. Leave the chaos to you.
Now at Robert's office.
So how many farmers are involved so far?
Well, right now we've got 28.
Robert walks with Gwen.
I'm breaking a sweat.
Yeah, I've got a list of names.
I need all the paperwork. I need the hydrology reports on the area. I need the water rights going back to the late 19th century, prohibited easements, everything.
Done.
And I'm going to need to read all the biology data. Are the fish native? Are they planters? Everything. Did you take care of those revised taxes, my mother?
Oh, you still need her signature ASAP. And Balser Pharmaceutical called to confirm your wife's interview.
Great.
A gray-haired man enters.
Robert, I had another call from Jake Cardwell. We got a very worried farmer on our hands.
Yeah, I don't blame him. If Purity gets their way, there won't be another working farm left in the county.
When is the Purity deposition?
Tomorrow.
Well, there happens to be a ton of case law on this. You should look at it before. I'll have it sent over. Stay on top of it.
Now in the school gymnasium, Maggie sets up chairs as Lily and her mother walk in.
Lily, you're going to be fine.
Excuse me, Miss Sanders?
What's the matter, Lily?
Well, my nose is stuffed up. My throat is all scratchy. I don't think I can sing tonight.
Let me see your tongue.
She sticks it out.
Oh, okay. You know what I think you have? Butterflies. I get them too. But you know what? As soon as you open your mouth to sing, they're going to disappear. In fact, I promise. Go on, why don't you go get ready?
Okay.
As Lily steps onto the stage, her mother approaches Maggie.
Hi, I think we probably bumped into each other in the hallway or something. I'm Lily's mom.
Oh, thanks. Maggie Andrews. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Lily is just adorable.
Aw.
Where'd she get that voice?
Oh, not for me, that's for sure. Can I help you with these chairs? Oh,
I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
I was a music major for a couple of years, but...
Ellen unstacks a chair.
You were a music major?
Yeah. Until I met my husband, and he was studying law, and... There were loans that needed to be paid, and music didn't seem very practical, so I switched and got a degree in business.
And then you had a child and you stopped working.
Something like that. How about you?
Oh, I'm a music major, too. In my dreams. Well, your husband must be proud of Lily.
He is. He is.
Is he here?
Kate glances off.
He's on his way.
Nighttime. In his office, Robert paces as he reads a form. Later, he gazes off thoughtfully, then grips a pen in his teeth and picks up a chart. Later still, he sits at his desk, taking notes as he looks at a book. Now in the school gymnasium, Jack glances around from his seat in the audience. Nearby, Kate picks up her coat from an empty chair in front of her as Dalton and an older woman approach.
Hey.
How are you, Kate?
Good, how are you?
The old woman turns and faces Kate.
Is Robert here?
No, your son. How are you, Dalton?
Good, good, thanks.
Don't you think Dalton should have worn a tie?
Oh, come on, I hate ties.
Kate pats Dalton on the back. On stage, Lily peeks out from the wing and waves. Her mother smiles.
You're gonna be great.
Lily beams and steps behind the curtain. Kate glances at the closed gym door.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry I raised a bum for a son.
You didn't. He just can't stop working.
Like his father.
Backstage, Maggie puts her hand to her chest. Nathan approaches and hands his mother a rose.
Oh.
Good luck, Mom.
I love you.
They embrace.
Oh, thank you.
I love you so much.
Okay.
Break a leg.
He runs off.
Oh, Lord, help me through this. Thank God.
She motions with her hand and smooths her skirt. Now the curtain opens, revealing the choir standing on risers. Maggie steps behind a microphone facing the crowd. Jack whispers to his son and they smile.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, so much for coming. My name is Maggie Andrews, and I am the director of the chorus. We've got a terrific show for you tonight. Your kids are just great. They've been working really hard. And because of it, I have some terrific news. The city has selected your kids to sing at the lighting of the Christmas tree in the town square. So rehearsals start on Monday and they better be good.
Maggie takes a deep breath and smiles at the choir.
Okay, so let's begin. To kick off the fall harvest concert, we have a wonderful young singer,
Miss Lily Layton.
Lily steps behind the microphone and lowers it to her level. In the auditorium aisle, Kate kneels down with a camcorder.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties.
Now Dalton and Robert's mother walk together toward the front door of the house.
That's good of you to escort me home.
Well, I do live next door, so...
They walk inside.
Dalton, are you going to stay for tea?
No, I gotta go.
Oh, Dalton, you can stay. I insist. I want to talk about this evening.
I got a stack of papers waiting on me. I haven't even started them.
Robert enters.
Hey,
Robert.
How you doing?
His mother's eyebrows raise.
Dalton, who is that stranger in my house? Now, wait, don't tell me. Oh, yes. My son, the attorney.
Mom, why do you have to pick a fight with me?
Your cheap entertainment.
At $100 an hour?
Dalton, shouldn't mothers support their sons right or wrong?
Mothers love their sons, right or wrong. There's a great difference.
I need you to sign this.
What's that?
Revised taxes.
Work. That couldn't have waited.
Mom, come on, I'm tired.
Dalton, tell him he won't know tired till he reaches my age.
Listen to your mother. Good night.
Goodbye.
Dalton leaves.
Sign it. Drop it in the mailbox. I gotta go home.
Robert, don't just make money.
I hear you.
Make memories.
I'm listening.
He leaves. Now he walks into his house.
Oh, beautiful for space.
Kate?
For amber waves of rain.
He walks through the foyer and ducks under a sign reading, Bravo Lily. In the living room, Kate watches the concert video as she sips a glass of wine. Her eyes stay fixed on the TV as Robert enters.
I'm sorry, I had a bunch of case law I had to look at for tomorrow.
And you had to be there till 8:30? There was no time in the day to cram in, which you absolutely had to do till 8:30 tonight.
It's not like I didn't want to go to the concert. I had 10,000 phone calls and Dean's in my office.
He sinks into an armchair. The television displays the paused image of Lily's solo. Robert frowns, gazing downward.
And even after everybody's gone for some reason, I just can't seem to leave.
You know, I'm used to you, Robert. I know you think you can do everything, even though you can't. It's Lily I worry about.
Is she still awake?
Yeah.
He stands and walks out of the room. Kate stares ahead, now in Lily's bedroom.
Hi.
I'm not talking to you. I'm in the middle of a show.
Robert turns off Lily's TV.
Kate, you'd never have a TV in her room. Whose idea was that?
Yours.
Right.
He smiles and sits down next to her on the bed.
I'm gonna have to start making some better decisions for you. How was it?
I was really good. People clapped and cheered for me, Dad.
I'll bet they did.
You would have really liked the show. But, Dad, I wished you were there.
She stares at her father and he nods.
I will be next time. I promise.
He puts his hand on her shoulder, then leans down and kisses her cheek. He smiles, then stands up and walks toward the door. He pauses and faces Lily.
I know you get tired of hearing it, but I don't have to be there to be proud of you.
He gazes at his daughter, who smiles sadly. He leaves, now in the living room.
Kate?
He walks through the room, glancing around. Spotting the TV remote on the arm of the sofa, he picks it up and turns on the video.
God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good.
As Robert stares at the TV, his lips curl up in a tight smile.
Shining sea.
On the screen, Maggie steps behind the microphone.
Wasn't she wonderful? We're all proud of Lily Layton. What a terrific future she has.
Now at Maggie's house, she opens the door.
That's your mother. Come in.
Jack and Maggie follow the bald man into the living room.
Sorry it's so late.
Didn't know doctors still made house calls.
Well,
There are exceptions.
Well, please, sit.
The doctor sits. Maggie and Jack join him and hold hands. Nathan watches from a doorway.
Maggie, your test results came back.
It's not good.
Your heart's not pumping well. That's why you're having trouble breathing. You're in congestive heart failure.
Maggie and Jack stare at the doctor with furrowed brows.
We thought it was the flu.
It's myocarditis. It gives the same symptoms, but it's not the flu. I wish it was. I really do. We think it was probably caused by a virus.
What does it mean?
It means the muscle cells of Maggie's heart are being destroyed. And it's getting worse.
What do we do?
There's nothing more I can do. I want you to go to Boston for some tests.
Nathan leans his head against the doorway and lowers his gaze. Now in the Leighton's kitchen, Lily sings from her songbook. She sits down.
Can't do this.
Kate takes cookies from the oven.
Light coming through. Move your music stuff. These look really good. We have to save the two biggest ones for Maggie. You know how she loves chocolate chip.
I like Maggie, too. Wish I'd gotten to know her a long time ago. I'd like you to help her in class, though, okay?
Robert enters and peers down at the cookies.
And it smells like a franchise. So this is what was driving me crazy while I was shaving. Yeah?
I thought you were going to take these back to the store.
Kate holds the shoebox.
No!
Lily slaps Robert's hand.
Why are you holding that on me? Who are they for?
For the choir.
Robert nods, shoebox in hand.
And you are coming to the Christmas concert, right?
He sets down the shoes.
If there's one time a year you can count on me, it's Christmas. And hopefully, with any luck, this will be our last Christmas in this house. Next year, Madison Hill.
Madison Hill? You don't want to live there.
You'll love it. You have a bigger room.
He points to Kate.
And you have an interview with Balser Pharmaceutical. 10 a.m.
Interview for what?
For Mommy's new job.
Unbelievable. I thought we were going to talk about this.
Talk?
Forget it. I'll try to make the interview.
I pulled a lot of strings to get you in front of the line.
Fine, Robert. Okay. Case closed. I'll go.
Robert nods.
Good.
Wide-eyed, Kate gazes at Lily, who watches as Robert leaves. Lily's eyes shift to her mother, and Kate averts her gaze. Lily slams her book shut.
Lily.
As the girl heads for the door, Kate touches her arm and Lily faces her.
So, if you get this job, I guess I'll never see you either.
Lily stares at her mother, tight-lipped, then runs out. Kate swallows hard. Now Maggie and Dalton cross empty classrooms, followed by Jack.
So I phoned all the parents and let them know that I might have to leave. The doctor said he'd call as soon as he got a heart donor.
You need a transplant?
That's the only thing they can do. The good news is, at least I made the list.
When they do call, we need to get to Boston as fast as we can.
Yeah, we can't go anywhere without this beeper. Jack has one, too.
He holds his up.
Look, if you need anything, if I can help in any way.
Well, I was wondering, if I get paged at school, maybe you could give Nathan a ride home. We'll hire a sitter to be with him when we're in
Boston. No, you won't. Nathan can stay with me till you get back.
Oh, Dalton.
You sure?
Absolutely. I've got a wonderful neighbor who'd love to have a little boy to drop by and have hot chocolate. And if Nathan's with me, I can make sure he gets all his homework done. See, everything's covered.
Thank you.
Now Kate enters her kitchen in a business suit, sipping coffee. She spies Lily's songbook on the table.
Oh, Lily.
She picks it up and studies the front cover, then heads out. Now Maggie enters a music room where students chatter.
Hi, everyone.
She crosses to a music stand.
Hey, everybody, we're going to warm up.
Maggie scans the room. Gripping the stand, she shuts her eyes. As Lily and some students converse, others leaf through their music sheets. Kate enters with her daughter's songbook and sees Maggie lost in thought.
Silent night, holy night.
The kids face Maggie.
All is come.
Two girls take a seat. Maggie lifts her gaze toward Lily with a faraway look.
Okay, everybody open your songbooks. We're going to warm up in groups.
Kate crosses to the desks. Lily meets her and takes her book.
You left it on the kitchen table.
Shutting her eyes, Maggie steps from the music stand and leans forward on a chalkboard frame. As she rests her head against it, Kate approaches.
Maggie, what is it? Are you all right?
They hold hands.
Do you want me to get the doctor? I can't do this. I don't have the strength. Can you do me a favor?
Sure, of course.
Take over.
You mean today?
No, I mean the Christmas program.
Oh, Maggie, no, I couldn't. I don't have the skill.
But you were a music major.
I know, but that was a long time ago.
Kate glances at the kids.
I'm not capable. I can't.
But you have the heart.
Kate cocks her head gently.
It's just a joke.
As Maggie looks off, Kate smiles glumly.
It's just that I have something today.
The first Noel.
Kate and Maggie face Lily and three other students who sing at the back of the class. Maggie faces Kate with pleading eyes.
I can't do it.
These kids.
With moist eyes, Kate faces Lily. Kate meets Maggie's gaze. Evening. In their living room, Kate and Lily decorate a shelf with Christmas lights.
All right, where's the other box, Lily?
Oh, I know where it is. Here, just a sec, I'll get it.
Lily runs into the kitchen.
Right here.
She carries a box.
You know, I think the next year we should go crazy with the lights. Grandma does that.
Why not?
The shoebox sits inside.
What are these doing here? Your father was supposed to return them.
As Kate sets the shoes aside, she and Lily swap a look. Kate sifts through decorations.
I think you should go upstairs.
Lily walks past Robert. He faces Kate as she searches under a garland inside the box.
What's going on, Kate? Missed your appointment.
Something came up at the elementary school.
What are you talking about?
I'm doing the Christmas program.
She sets a bow aside as Robert glares.
This is not happening. You did not blow off Balser Pharmaceutical for an elementary school Christmas program. Please tell me that you're joking.
Maggie got sick.
Maggie.
The music teacher, Robert, the choir.
Give her an aspirin. Is that your problem?
She's waiting for a heart transplant. A heart transplant. Something you might want to think about.
She enters the kitchen. Robert follows.
Sam, we have an opportunity to get an amazing home at a great price, but we can't get it. If you don't go out and get the job.
Robert.
And by the way, why can't the school come up with a replacement? Isn't that why we pay taxes?
It's a volunteer position. If Maggie hadn't been doing it, there wouldn't be a choir. And if there wasn't a choir, our daughter and the rest of the kids wouldn't have had the experience of singing and performing for the community. And I don't know why it is that I'm explaining myself to you.
She returns to the living room. He follows.
Why can't somebody else volunteer? Why can't somebody else be responsible?
Speaking of which...
She holds out the red shoes.
Why you?
Kate tosses the box aside.
Why not me, Robert? Why? This is important to me. Maybe this is something that'll make me feel good. Look, I know it may interfere with your game plan of what's best for you.
This isn't about me. It isn't about me. It's about the family.
Oh, this is your dream scenario. You just want me to follow you.
You don't know what my dreams are? You know what my dream is? I'll tell you. I'd like to go into Dean's office just once and say, hey, why don't you give this crappy case to some other associate? But I don't. You know why? Because I have a family to support.
I'm sorry we're such a burden.
Oh, please.
His brow furrowed, Robert purses his lips, then faces Kate.
I'm just saying.
Blinking, Robert glances off. He picks the shoebox up from an easy chair and takes a seat. He rocks back and forth, resting his chin on his hand. Kate stares intently.
I'm just saying, you don't know what my dreams are.
Grimacing, Robert heaves a sigh. Kate blinks and lowers her gaze.
Maybe that's a problem.
She shakes her head.
For both of us.
Kate stares at Robert. He averts his gaze, lost in thought, then half turns toward her with parted lips. Now in Nathan's bedroom, the boy tosses fitfully in his sleep. He sits up and gazes off. He climbs out of bed in his pajamas and bare feet. Now light illuminates a room as a door opens. Nathan steps onto a throw rug, then makes his way to his mother's bedside. He stares gravely down at Maggie, who lies sleeping. The boy takes a seat at the edge of her bed. then leans down. As Nathan rests his head on her chest, she turns her head toward him, her eyes open.
Nathan, what is it? What's the matter?
He sits up and sadly gazes off.
Your heart. I just wanted to make sure it was still beating.
They share a long look. Nathan lies across Maggie's chest and she embraces him. Maggie gazes off pensively. Now in town, Robert exits Mimi's coffee shop.
No, this is not gonna work. This is not gonna work.
Outside Wilson's department store, a man takes a figure off the top of a large evergreen tree. Robert gets the shoebox out of his car and approaches him.
Excuse me. You work at Wilson's?
Better than that. I own it. Tom Wilson.
Hey, this fell out of a mail truck a while back, and you were closed. I probably should have gotten it to you.
Well, hey, most folks wouldn't go through all that trouble. Doesn't look like anything I ordered.
Mr. Wilson inspects the red shoes.
It's not exactly our style, but we'll give it a try.
All right, thanks a lot.
As Mr. Wilson passes the box off to a store employee, Robert gets in his Mercedes and turns the key. Mr. Wilson looks over, then walks to Robert's open driver's side window. Robert slams his hand on the steering wheel.
Damn. I'll call you a tow truck.
No, I gotta get this to the dealership.
No, trust me. I know just the guy. He's honest, he's decent, and he knows cars. It'll save you time.
Yeah, all right, thank you.
Now in Jack's auto shop.
Well, we'll do a diagnostic test. It's probably electrical.
All right. I need this car back as soon as possible.
I'll do what I can. Good.
Robert heads out.
Oh, listen, at night, why don't you put a cover on it, okay? It's Watson.
Hey.
Jack turns back into the shop, smiling. Carl grins at his boss.
Now that's the kind of guy that drinks cappuccino.
Jack reaches into his shirt pocket, pulls out his pager, and checks the number.
Okay. I got it.
Jack rushes to the front desk. He frantically grabs for his coat.
Well, it's just you and me, kid. Let's say we go get an ice cream cone.
No, thanks.
You sure?
Have you ever known anybody who's died?
Nathan looks up at his teacher with soulful eyes.
No.
Dalton shifts on his feet uncomfortably as the boy stares at him.
Hey, I bet you're hungry. I sure am. Come on, let's get out of here.
In the music room.
I'm Kate Layton, Lily's mom. I'm here to take Mrs. Andrews' place while she's away. Okay, listen, guys. You're going to have to help me out here because I've never done this before, but Mrs. Andrews told me that you guys were great, and I know that's true because I've been to every single one of your concerts, including the one where Troy threw up on stage.
The girl behind Troy swats him in the back of the head as he smiles.
This Christmas concert that's coming up is going to be huge. Mrs. Andrews is counting on us, and we're not going to let her down, right?
Right.
What's that?
Right.
Pardon me?
Right.
Right. Okay, so everybody turn to page 32 in their music books.
Kate smiles as the students quickly do as she says. Kate conducts.
1, 2, 3.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Now in a hospital, Maggie is wheeled out on a gurney.
This is it, huh? Showtime.
Going pretty fast here, Maggie. Better keep your seatbelt on.
Doctor, who's the donor?
Teenage boy.
Oh my God, his poor mother.
The doctor takes Jack aside.
I'll be out as soon as it's over.
The doctor follows as Maggie is wheeled into the operating room. Jack leans wearily against a door. Evening. Dalton and Nathan trudge across the snow in front of Ellen's lavishly decorated house.
Wow. That's a lot of lights.
Like that, huh? Man, Miss Layton's pretty serious about Christmas. It took me a whole weekend to put all this stuff up.
Dalton knocks on the door, then stands behind Nathan.
Hey, Ellen.
Dalton.
This is Nathan.
Well, well, well.
Hi.
He's going to be staying with me tonight, maybe a few nights.
I heard you were coming. Come with me, I want to show you something.
Ellen leads them inside. She and Nathan enter a bedroom.
Here it is.
The room is laden with Boston Red Sox memorabilia, and baseball cards are tacked on a corkboard. Nathan picks up a softball as he paces around the room, ogling trophies. Ellen looks around proudly.
What about all this baseball stuff?
My son. A long time ago.
He must have been good.
He was. All he did was practice, practice, practice. He had to be the best. What's your favorite team?
The Red Sox.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, maybe you'd like this.
She takes a Red Sox ball cap off another trophy and hands it to Nathan.
I'm sure it'll fit.
He puts it on.
Robert won't even know it's gone.
Thanks.
Nathan moves in front of a mirror and admires his new cap. Ellen picks a red and white lunchbox off the dresser and looks it over. She opens its metal lid and looks inside. Nathan adjusts the cap on his head and smiles at himself in the mirror. Now in the dining room, Ellen carries the lunchbox to the table, patting its side. Her gaze falls on a wooden picture frame and she picks it up. The frame holds a photo of Robert as a young boy, posed throwing a baseball. Ellen carries the frame back to the dining table, sits down, and with a thoughtful smile, puts pen to paper.
Dear Robert, I've been thinking about when you were a boy.
Back at the hospital, Maggie sits up in bed, staring off.
Jack, why didn't they do the procedure?
I don't know.
The doctor enters and pulls back the curtain, dividing Maggie's room. Jack stands by Maggie's side.
The news isn't good. Lab reports came back on the donor heart. It had been a perfect match to your blood type, but it was infected with hepatitis B. I'm very sorry.
Jack and Maggie exchange somber looks.
So what do we do now? I mean, there must be something we can do. Maybe there'll be another donor. That's always a possibility, right?
With Maggie's immune system failing and her blood type being so hard to match, the chances are, well, we may have missed our window.
Maggie's head droops and she stares into her lap. Jack's gaze shifts from the doctor to his wife. She slowly lifts her eyes to his.
Jack, we need to go home. I'm not staying in a hospital.
Now Kate plays the piano in her family room. Robert enters and leans on the wall.
I want to make an offer on that house.
Kate slides over to the edge of the piano bench and faces him.
I thought you said we couldn't afford it.
Well, the Christmas program will be over in a couple weeks, and after that?
I don't know after that.
Robert looks away, then approaches.
Kate, what are you trying to do? What's going on?
She stands and faces him with a smile.
I like seeing our daughter at school. I like working with the kids. Maybe I want to teach.
Go back to college.
Yeah, and get my teaching credential, right?
When did this come up?
Robert, I've been trying to talk to you for months. You're never here, and even when you are, I can't seem to get your attention.
I'm just trying to make a living, Kate.
He stares at her coldly. Kate's eyes glisten with tears as she shakes her head.
But what kind of living is it, Robert? And at what cost? We just happen to be two people sharing the same house. Sometimes the same bed.
Robert's gaze lowers.
Not much else.
He swallows and stiffens his jaw, avoiding her stare.
I think
think I'm gonna make the offer anyway.
Then you make it alone.
Kate walks past him and out of the room. Robert stares off blankly. At the Andrews house, Jack shows Kate into the living room.
Oh, Kate.
Hey, Maggie, are you sure this is okay? Maybe some other time.
Baloney. Sit.
I'll fix your lunch.
Thank you. I have been dying to talk about Christmas music. So how are the kids doing?
Great. Great. I need your advice, Maggie. I was thinking instead of singing at the tree, maybe caroling through town.
Sold. I love it.
Really?
Yeah, you could go house to house.
Now Robert walks with Gwen.
Okay, so Purity is claiming that nearly 90% of the fish died in 81, 82, and 83.
Well, those claims are unbelievable. 90%? The water level's the highest it's been in 10 years, so that doesn't work. We're getting our numbers. Gwen?
I'm trying.
Try harder. And we're getting the expert out of Woods Hole.
He's available, but he's never been used as an expert.
Now they walk into their crowded office.
What if he freezes on the stand? And we still have that marine biologist, Dr. Davis, from the Stanley case.
I can't use that guy. Get me Woods Hole. He's the guy.
Purity is claiming the farmers are taking too much water. He's going to testify the fish are dying when the lake levels are at their highest. He's going to kill. Gwen, get it together.
Robert starts to walk away, then notices the stares of his co-workers.
Mr. Layton, yeah. River City Realty is on line two, and this came from your mother.
Thanks.
The receptionist hands him a package. He walks into his office, puts the package on a shelf, and nears his desk. Pulling off a leather glove, he picks up the phone receiver.
Hey, Jeannie.
Mr. Layton, I've been trying to reach you.
Yeah, no, I've had a bit of a long day.
It's about the Madison Hill house. I'm sorry to say there's been another offer.
Well, what do you mean there's another offer?
Someone came in higher.
And they're accepting it?
I'm afraid so.
But, well, you promised me that I was in first position.
I'm sorry, Mr. Layton, but I couldn't reach you.
All right, well, if the offer falls out, I want you to call me.
Of course I will.
He slams down the phone.
Damn it.
Back at the Andrews's.
Okay, salt-free and tasty. Mm.
Jack puts down a tray of food and kisses his wife.
You okay?
I'm fine. Go to work.
Wherever you go. Just in case.
He holds up a beeper.
Thank you.
He kisses Maggie's hand.
Go. Go, go.
He stands and smiles at the women.
Bye.
Bye.
He leaves.
Wow. I don't remember the last time I saw my husband for lunch or dinner or parent-teacher conference. But I know we live in the same house, because when I grab a toothpaste in the morning, the tube's been squeezed in the middle.
Well, you know what I think. I think guys are slow learners.
Yeah, well.
Just hold on to what you saw good in him all those years ago.
I don't know if I can do that anymore, Maggie.
Maggie takes Kate's hand in hers.
So how long have you two been married?
Not long enough, damn it.
Oh, Maggie, I'm so sorry.
A tear rolls down Maggie's cheek as she smiles sadly.
The thing about Jack is that he's not ready for what's coming.
As Kate gazes at Maggie, her chin quivers.
He's not ready at all. My God, what about Nathan? I don't want to leave them, Kate. I don't want to leave any of this.
She covers her mouth. Closing her eyes, she covers them with her hand. Kate swallows deeply as she stares at her friend.
I'm sorry.
Maggie gazes downward. Now a car pulls up outside Maggie's house. In the driver's seat, Dalton turns to Nathan.
If you need help with homework or anything, call me, okay?
Sometimes I'm afraid that when I go home, My mom won't be there.
Dalton avoids Nathan's gaze. The boy unfastens his seatbelt and gets out of the car. Slinging his backpack over his shoulder, he races up the crumbling stone steps outside his house, now with Maggie and Kate.
Well, it's hard to imagine this, but Jack and I met at one of those ballroom dance studios.
Jack, you've got to be kidding.
Nathan?
Yeah?
How was school?
Stunk.
Kate raises her eyebrows.
That's great. So, anyway, ever since I was a little girl, I just loved to dance, but not Jack. His mother made him take lessons.
Oh, poor Jack.
I think she thought it would give him a little poise.
Or help him with the girls.
Well, exactly. Lucky for me.
Lucky for him.
So every year on our anniversary, we get dressed up and we go out dancing.
That's so romantic.
I used to have this pair of dancing shoes. I don't know what happened to them, but...
Nathan listens from the doorway.
Every time I put them on, I just felt so special.
Nathan's eyes dart as he smiles thoughtfully.
This for a few hours once a year. It was magic.
Nathan darts into the kitchen and puts his juice glass on the counter. He runs to the front door.
Jack hated to dance, but... Oh, he did it for me.
Kate smiles.
He's not bad with a wrench in his hand either.
Now Nathan runs alone down a street lined with stores. He crosses, then runs on a brick sidewalk. Passing by a decorated tree, he enters Wilson's department store. Inside, he runs past display cases. As he jogs up a staircase, he bumps into an employee.
Guy?
The employee watches curiously as Nathan runs down a staircase and approaches the shoe displays. He picks up a shiny red rubber boot, turns it over, then puts it back down. He picks up a suede pump, then puts it down and walks past a display of purple ankle boots. He reaches a display in the back of the department and steps onto a stool to search the shelves. He runs to a pile of stacked shoe boxes, then slides a stool closer. Stepping onto it, he searches another shelf. As his eyes scan the selection, he spots the red brocade shoes on a glass display shelf. His eyes widen.
Perfect.
He picks up the left shoe and gazes at its floral pattern. He turns the shoe over, revealing a yellow price tag.
$19.99.
He turns the shoe gently between his fingers, then places it back on the display shelf. He smiles broadly. Turning, he runs out of the shoe department back toward the door. Now outside, he runs down the sidewalk smiling. He races through a parking lot, then into his father's auto shop.
Dad! Dad, I need a job. I need a job now. Please? Okay, Dad? It's important. It's really, really important.
A job? What are you talking about? Why aren't you home?
Hey, boss. Cappuccino man wants to talk to you.
Robert stands near his car.
Dad, I really need to make some money. Dad, look, please, I...
Nathan, we're not getting a puppy, okay? You got me? No puppy.
But, Dad, it's not about puppy.
Jack approaches Robert.
You kept my car an extra week, and where do you get these kind of numbers?
Well, injectors in a car like this are very expensive, Mr. Layton.
Robert crushes a soda can in his hand and tosses it into a trash barrel.
Money like that for an injector, no wonder you're dying.
Jack lowers his gaze as Robert gets into his car, then watches the lawyer drive away. He reaches into the trash barrel and takes out the soda can.
Nickel's a nickel.
Nathan's eyes widen.
Can I have that can, Dad?
Jack smiles and tosses him the can. Nathan fingers the crumpled metal, gazing at the can as his father leaves. His eyes shift, then widen as a smile spreads across his face. Now Nathan and Dalton exit the elementary school.
You know, you didn't do too well on your last math test, young man.
I know.
You do better than that.
Hey, look at this!
Nathan finds a discarded soda can.
This is great!
Great? Well, it's an empty, dirty can. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but it's worth a nickel. And if I get 20 of them, that's a dollar. And if I get a whole lot more, that's even more money. And then I can buy my mom a special Christmas present.
Dalton smiles. Now in a gravel lot near a highway bridge, Robert parks his car. Nearby, Jake Cardwell stands with a group of men at a riverbank. Robert approaches with a notebook in hand.
Hey, Jake.
Hey.
Mr. Layton, we're honored you came. Hey. No one else ever did. When they heard you were coming, a few of the other men wanted to be here. Oh, I know how important the water is to you.
It's everything.
Robert nods.
Well, I brought my camera. I want you to show me the home of this famous sucker fish.
Jake leads him to the river. Now at the Anders home, Nathan enters his room. He sets the empty soda can on a table, then slides a drawer out from underneath his bed. Inside is a jar filled an eighth of the way up with loose change. Nathan dumps the money out on his bed and counts it. He slumps back against his pillow. Back at the river, Robert measures the water level with a ruler and records it in his notebook.
You know, not all developers or environmental groups act like Purity.
Are we going to lose our farms, Mr. Layton? Most of the men here have roots that go back over 100 years on the land.
None of that'll make any difference to a judge.
Why are they going after people like us? Because of a fish nobody wants to catch and nobody wants to eat?
Now, this Purity company is like an environmental hunter. They don't care about the fish. They want your land. They've cut off your water, and land prices fall, and you've got to sell.
Then they buy at fire sale prices. It ain't the fish that's endangered, it's us.
My grandfather was a farmer during the Depression. The bank took his land.
Robert and the farmers walk along the riverbank.
I don't know if we can win.
He stops and faces Jake.
But we can fight.
The two men nod.
I've talked to experts until I'm blue in the face. Whatever's killing the fish, it isn't your irrigation.
Well, sir, if you don't win, we won't be here the same time next year.
They shake hands. As Jake walks off, Robert shakes hands with each of the other farmers.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Take care. Take it easy.
Thanks.
Now at the Andrews home, Maggie sleeps in a hospital bed with an oxygen mask over her nose and mouth. Nathan plugs in Christmas tree lights that hang from one of the bed's guardrails.
Nate, come eat.
Nathan heads around to the other side of the bed and turns on another set of colored lights draped around the opposite guardrail.
Nathan.
Jack pours a glass of juice, then storms into the living room.
Nate.
Why didn't you answer me?
I wanted to surprise Mom with these lights.
Your mom needs rest, not surprises. Your supper's ready.
Maggie pulls the mask down from her face.
Nathan.
Her hand moves weakly to the guardrail.
Thank you for the lights. They're beautiful.
She cups her hand over a light bulb.
You're welcome.
As Nathan starts to head for the kitchen, his father stops him.
Your mom's right. Those lights look great, son.
He lets Nathan by, then moves to his wife's bedside. His mouth opens and closes nervously as he grips the guardrail.
Guess I didn't handle that very well, huh?
As Maggie strokes his forearm, she gazes up at him weakly.
I need to talk to Nathan tonight.
Nighttime. Christmas decorations adorn the front yard of Ellen's home.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells.
I can't sing it.
I can't sing it.
Louder,
yes,
you can. Dashing through the snow in one horse open sleigh. Over the fields we go, laughing all the way.
Ha, ha, ha.
We're going to have a ring, making spirits bright.
What fun it is to laugh and sing a play.
Daddy!
Hey, Robert.
We already ate.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm late. I got caught up with clients.
We didn't think you were coming.
Kate locks eyes with her husband, then looks away.
Well, sometimes I get a little overwhelmed at work myself.
We knew you'd get here. Let's get you something to eat.
You bet.
Ellen leads her son into the kitchen.
Robert.
She opens the oven.
Sit down.
Robert heads to a counter.
Smells good.
Everything smells good.
She hands him a plate of food.
This is the pot roast test.
As Robert takes a bite, his mother closes the oven and watches him chew. A smile crosses his lips.
That's a good pot roast. That's the best you've ever made.
Robert, I'm not blind and I'm not stupid. Something's wrong between you and Kate.
Robert nods, then lifts his gaze to meet his mother's.
You're right.
Ellen cocks her head.
But you know, I also think that people go through things today that are more complicated than when you and Dad were married.
And what are those things? Power, prestige, jockeying for the top rung in the corporate ladder?
She retrieves a plate of rolls from another counter.
I can still remember the sound of your feet on the floor after you climbed out of your crib. And some days I still think I can smell the grass after you'd mowed the lawn. Sixth grade. Oh, the look on your face when you brought home that report card. All A's. And your first little league game?
Oh, the River City Red Sox.
Oh, when I saw the tears in your eyes when you struck out. Thought you'd let the team down. Ordinary things, Robert. Just simple, everyday things. Your father missed out on so many of those things. He never shared those memories. And in the end, I think he would have liked to.
Robert stares off pensively as his mother leaves, tightening a red shawl around her shoulders. Later, in the front yard, she and Dalton stand side by side facing the street.
They arrive separately. They leave separately.
They don't realize how much they love each other.
Sometimes when things are darkest, it's for a reason.
He walks off toward his own house.
Good night, Dalton.
Good night.
He moves to an alcove along the side of his house and picks up a clear garbage bag filled with aluminum cans.
What in the world are you doing with all those cans?
Now, what's wrong with trying to make the world a little better place for somebody?
As he stuffs the bag into the trunk of his car, Ellen stares off distantly. Dalton watches her.
You all right? You look tired.
Oh, I'm fine. I'm just concerned.
You sure?
Yeah.
Dalton takes a look around her yard.
You want me to turn off all the lights?
No, I want to keep them on. I'm going to sit up a while.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
As he walks off, Ellen slowly trudges inside. Now at the Andrews home, Maggie holds a handmade card that shows an angel bearing a gift. She lowers the oxygen mask from her face and smiles at her son.
It's beautiful. Your design is so clever.
Do you like the angel on the front, Mom?
I love the angel.
She pulls Robert's Red Sox cap off her son's head. Her expression sobers.
I'm going to be seeing a lot of angels soon.
You are?
Yeah. In heaven.
Why is God taking you to heaven?
I don't have all the answers, Nathan. But it's not like he's taking me so much as receiving me in heaven.
Are there animals in heaven?
I bet there's lots of animals.
Puppies?
Particularly puppies.
She runs her hand down his arm.
Would God be mad at me if I told him I didn't want him to take you to heaven?
No. He understands.
Then I kind of want him to change his mind.
You know, you might get mad at me sometime because I had to go, and I want you to know that that's okay.
Nathan shakes his head.
But always remember...
She flashes a warm smile.
...that you are my greatest joy. I love you very much.
She runs her hand tenderly across Nathan's chest, and he takes her hand. In the kitchen, Jack listens at the sink.
Are you gonna see Grandpa?
He's gonna meet me at the gate.
Will you tell him something for me?
Sure.
When I was little, I found a dollar on his dresser. And I took it. And I never got a chance to say I was sorry. But I am. I really am.
I'll tell him.
Don't go, Mama. Please don't go. I don't want you to go. Why is God taking you?
I just have to go, honey. I have to.
Then take me with you.
No, I need you to stay here with old Dad. No, he's just gonna fall apart if you're not here to take care of him.
Jack tosses a dish towel over his shoulder and watches from the doorway, his eyes red with tears.
Okay.
Maggie grips her son's hands.
Nathan, even though Mommy has to go, always know that I'm gonna be right here.
She holds her palm over her son's heart.
Promise.
Maggie nods.
I promise.
Know what, Mom? Every time I feel my heart beat, I'm gonna think of you.
Maggie beams.
Thank you.
Nathan gives his mother a hug. As Maggie runs her hand through his hair, she looks to the doorway. Jack flashes her a tearful smile, then heads back into the kitchen. Tears glisten on Maggie's cheeks. She kisses the back of her son's head. Daytime. Dalton trudges through the snow in his front yard. He reads a newspaper, then glances up at Ellen's house.
Oh, boy.
He crosses to his neighbor's yard, where the Christmas lights remain lit.
Ellen!
Dalton steps to her front door.
Left all your lights on out here.
Dalton lingers on the porch, then bends down. Lifting a corner of a doormat, he picks up a key and opens the door.
Ellen!
He enters the foyer.
You know you left all your lights on out there? Gonna cost you a small fortune.
He peers up the stairs.
Ellen!
Open-mouthed, Dalton gazes into another room. His brow furrows. He moves forward. Ellen sits slumped to one side in her rocking chair, with her head resting on her shoulder. Her face is pale and lifeless. Dalton crouches by her side and runs a hand along her bathrobe. Stifling tears, he strokes her cheek. Later, Lily, Robert, Kate, and Dalton stand among a small crowd of mourners gathered at a graveside. Kate nods to a minister who passes. Dalton stands next to Robert.
We're here for a short time. It goes so quickly.
Lily nuzzles her father's chest. Robert kisses the top of her head. Kate watches them, blinking. Lowering her gaze, she eyes Robert. She withdraws her hand from his back as she steps away. Robert closes his coat as he and Dalton stare downward.
She lives on within us, Robert.
Kate rubs Lily's shoulder as the mother and daughter walk away. Dalton leaves Robert at the gravesite. Behind him, Kate stares as mourners pass. He half turns toward her. Then she continues on with Lily, followed by Dalton. Lifting his gaze, Robert stares off absently. Later, in the Andrews living room, Dr. Mather and a nurse stand at Maggie's bedside near an IV pole. The nurse approaches Jack, who rubs his mouth pensively.
Don't hesitate to call, no matter what the time, okay?
As she steps away, Dr. Mather faces Jack.
It won't be long, Jack. I appreciate everything.
Dr. Mather pats Jack's arm and leaves. Jack watches him go, then places his hands on his hips and turns to Maggie's bed.
Dad?
Nathan enters.
Where are you going?
Out. With Dalton.
You sure?
Nathan nods, then hangs his head.
Well, okay, you gotta eat, so...
I already had some cereal.
Oh, well, how about your lunch? I'll make you some...
Tuna fish.
Nathan holds a bag.
Dalton will be here any minute.
Jack's eyes dart, then he meets his son's gaze.
Okay. You sure you don't want to stay?
It's Christmas Eve, Dad. I've got stuff I have to do.
Okay.
Jack turns to face Maggie, who lies asleep.
Hurry back.
Outside, a view of Dalton's face is framed in the driver's side mirror of his car. Nathan steps onto the front porch, followed by Jack. The boy faces his father and they embrace. Stifling sobs, Jack nuzzles his son's cheek. They separate, and Nathan descends the porch steps. In the car mirror, Dalton's narrowed eyes blink back tears. Later, Dalton and Nathan round a corner onto the main street. Shoveled snow stands banked up along a sidewalk.
It's like here on River Street. I'd find some here.
They approach Wilson's.
Ooh, that's one of the prettiest Christmas trees I've ever seen. What do you think?
A decorated tree stands nearby. Nathan finds an empty soda can underneath it.
I got one!
Yeah, right.
They pass the tree.
Hey, you remember when I told you I never lost anyone close to me?
Yeah.
Dalton rests a hand on Nathan's shoulder.
I lied. My wife died 11 years ago, just before I moved here.
Why'd you lie?
Because it hurts to talk about it.
So why are you talking about it now?
Because I know the pain won't go away if you don't talk about it.
Well, that's good to know.
Nathan's eyes widen. He lowers his gaze and gestures with his head. Dalton places a hand on the boy's neck and they walk on.
Let's cross over here. How about it?
They cross the street.
Oh!
Nathan finds another can.
Hey, another one.
Another can.
Yeah.
Dozens of cans lie between two houses.
Wow!
Hey!
Look at all of them!
What's going on here?
It's a jackpot!
How about that?
You were right! This is a great place for cans.
Yeah? Cans?
Each one is worth 5 cents, and there's probably about 100 of them. So that's $5.
That's a lot of cans.
And that's a lot of money. A real whole lot of money.
Nathan gathers the cans.
So what are you gonna do with all that real whole lot of money?
Buy my mom some Christmas shoes.
Well, okay. Hey, let me help you.
Dalton pulls out a plastic bag. Later, Kate leads 24 candle-bearing carolers down a street. Now in Robert's office, he sits with Gwen reading a document. Robert puts down his papers, stands, and approaches a Venetian blind-covered window.
Christmas.
Outside, Kate smiles as they pass the McGraw and Hearst building. She stops and stares, allowing carolers to pass her by. Inside, Robert cranes his neck, listening. As Kate stands lost in thought, Robert returns to his seat and picks up the document. Outside, Kate bows her head and rejoins the carolers. Inside, Gwen caps her pen and rests her chin on her hand.
I gotta go. It's Christmas Eve. You should go, too.
We're gonna beat these guys, Gwen.
Well, if anyone can, Robert, you can.
Gwen places a small wrapped package on Robert's desk.
Merry Christmas.
She gets up.
Thank you. You too.
As she heads for the door, Gwen smiles at Robert. He peers down at the gold-wrapped, red-ribboned gift, then checks his watch. Setting down his papers, he gets up and grabs his coat. Now, Nathan enters his living room, tosses his backpack down and sighs. Jack kneels by Maggie's bedside, gripping her hand in his. Nathan gazes at his parents, then takes off. In his room, he slides open the drawer under his bed and takes out the money jar. He scoops up the change and bills and pockets them. Back in the living room, Jack rests his mouth on Maggie's hand. Nathan's parents face him as he re-enters the room. Maggie taps gently on her chest. Nathan heaves a sigh and heads out the front door. As Maggie faces Jack, he meets her gaze. She reaches out to him. Maggie's eyelids flutter. She extends her hand to him and he kisses her finger.
You have to let me go.
She withdraws her hand from his lips and meets his gaze. Tears well in Jack's eyes as he lowers them, biting his lip. He leans in.
About the puppy.
Jack smiles. Grinning, he shakes his head.
That's a dirty, rotten trick.
She smiles faintly. Jack leans over and kisses her.
One more thing.
Maggie stares intently at him.
Could we dance?
Jack returns her gaze. Blinking, his eyes brim with tears. He lowers his gaze. As Maggie reaches toward her oxygen tube, Jack unplugs the IV from her arm.
Okay.
He bends down and gingerly wraps his arms under her shoulder and legs. He lifts her to his chest, cradling her against him. Jack slowly dances in waltz time, half turning this way and that. Maggie's head nuzzles against his chest, and she strokes his hair. Her hand caresses his face. Robert's mouth contorts in a pained grimace as he stifles tears with closed eyes. As they turn, he opens his mouth. Now Nathan runs down River Street, where neon signs light storefronts. He bumps into a passing man.
Hey!
Sorry!
He passes the window display in front of Wilson's and pulls on the front door. It doesn't budge. As he pounds on the door, a man approaches from behind. It's Robert.
It can't be closed! It can't be! Open up! Please!
Robert stares pensively. Nathan bangs on the glass door. Robert steps up and joins him. An employee dressed like an elf lets them
in. Sometimes it locks on its own.
Thank you.
They quickly move past her. Elsewhere, a boy sits on Santa's lap.
Oh, and how old are you?
Robert approaches a male employee.
Excuse me. I'm looking for a sing-along doll. I think you were holding one for me.
Yeah, we were holding one. But that was until 6 o'clock. It's Christmas Eve. We had to sell it. You could try Dillinger's, but I heard they're sold out, too.
Meanwhile, in the women's shoe department.
No. No.
The red shoes are gone from the display shelf. Nathan rummages through boxes scattered across the floor. Nearby, Robert picks up a Monopoly board game.
Ladies and gentlemen, the store will be closing in 5 minutes.
The shoes.
Robert grabs a packaged Barbie doll.
Please bring your purchases to the cashier. The store will be closing in 5 minutes.
Nathan digs frantically through the remaining shoe boxes as Robert checks out a stuffed panda bear nearby. Nathan slumps down on a footrest.
Hey, kid. Do you like this?
Robert holds out the panda bear.
But then baseball, what are you into?
Nathan hangs his head.
Okay, I found the only kid in the world doesn't know what kind of present it was.
As Robert leaves, his foot kicks the lid off a shoebox. Inside are the red brocade pumps. Gaping, Nathan grabs the box and takes out one of the shoes.
Attention, please bring your purchases to the cashier. The store is now closed.
At the register.
Next.
Nathan cuts in front of Robert.
Excuse me.
Sorry, sir. I've got to get in real fast.
Robert rolls his eyes.
Okay.
$19.95 reduced.
Nathan sets down a wad of bills, then spills a handful of change out onto the counter.
Can you hurry, please?
As the employee separates the coins, Robert and the other customers in line look on impatiently. The employee counts up the last of the change.
Don't. You're $5.50 short.
What?
Did I stutter or something? You're $5.50 short.
The employee closes his eyes wearily.
Look, kid, you don't have enough money. Come back after New Year's, we'll probably be giving them away.
But it'll be too late by then. Too late.
The employee looks up at Robert.
Sir? Sir?
Yeah.
As Robert sets his merchandise on the counter, he glances at Nathan, who stands weeping.
Hey, kid.
Nathan faces him.
What's going on?
I don't have enough money, and my mom, she's been real sick. And
hey, slow down.
Nathan lowers his head for a moment.
Mister, did you ever know anybody that died?
Robert purses his lips and nods.
This is going to be my mom's last Christmas, and I wanted to get her these shoes so she would look beautiful when she got to heaven.
As Nathan's head droops, Robert stands frozen watching him. Nathan meets his gaze. Robert nods toward the register.
Oh, would you please? Oh, I'll pay you back, I promise.
Robert opens his wallet.
These are, this for him.
He hands over the shoebox to Nathan.
Thanks, mister.
On his way out, Nathan stops and smiles at Robert. Outside, snowflakes drift lightly to the ground. Nathan races out of the department store and slides across the icy sidewalk. He looks skyward, gaping, then races forward, a wide smile on his face. Back in the department store, Robert's gaze shifts thoughtfully. The employee at the register raises his eyebrows.
Sir? Are you ready? To cash out?
Robert's jaw hangs open.
No. No, I don't think I am.
He grabs his jacket and walks off. Moments later, he heads out of the store and trudges across the powdery white sidewalk. He glances skyward, then heads to his car. He climbs inside and sticks the key in the ignition. As Robert sits back in his seat, a man approaches.
Hey, won't start again? Ever think of buying American?
Listen, I could really use a ride. Could you help me?
Mr. Wilson stares at the sky.
It's almost a miracle, isn't it? Snowing on Christmas Eve.
Breathing in the air, he faces Robert.
You going to the concert?
I am. Come with me.
Robert climbs out of his car, shuts the door, and walks with Mr. Wilson.
My father made me swear I wouldn't miss any of the town's concerts.
I thought it was back at the town square.
Well, it was, but life's all about changes, don't you think? Come on.
Sir, I wanna buy these shoes for my mama, please. It's Christmas Eve and these shoes are just her size. Could you hurry? Daddy says there's not much time. You see, she's been sick for quite a while, and I know these shoes will make her smile, and I want her to look beautiful if Mama meets Jesus tonight.
Now Nathan runs home, passing the school choir in his front lawn.
Could you hurry? There's not much time. You see, want her to look beautiful if Mama meets Jesus tonight.
In the living room.
I'm here, Mom.
Nathan sets his baseball cap on the couch.
Mom?
Jack kneels at his wife's bedside, holding her hand in his. Nathan carries over the shoebox and opens it.
I bought you these shoes.
He holds them up and displays their flowery patterns.
To wear in heaven.
Maggie reaches out and takes the shoes in her frail hands. She holds them in front of her, admiring their red brocade material and decorative metal beads along the rims. An oxygen tube hangs draped from her ears and feeds into her nose by a pair of thin, clear extensions. She faces her son.
These are the most beautiful shoes I've ever seen.
A gentle smile appears on Nathan's face as his mother holds out the shoes.
Would you put them on for me?
Sure.
Nathan takes the shoes, and his father pulls the covers back from the foot of the bed. Nathan gently slides the toes of his mother's right foot into one of the slipper-like pumps, then does the same for the other foot. Snow dusts the hooded fleece collar of his denim jacket. Maggie smiles weakly at her son.
Thank you.
Nathan purses his lips. Maggie keeps her eyes on him as she pats her chest.
Don't forget.
Nathan holds his hand across his own chest, outside.
Father's Noel, the angels did say.
Back inside.
My father loved music. So much.
I know you've been worried about us. We'll be okay, huh? You don't have to hang on any longer.
Sobbing, Nathan rests his head against his mother's chest and she looks down at him. Jack strokes Maggie's hair as she leans her head back on her pillow. Outside, Robert and Mr. Wilson make their way down a walkway through gently falling snow. They gaze at the carolers. Robert brushes past people as he enters the throng and stands near Dalton.
Hey, Dalton. Have you seen Kate?
This is over there.
Smiling, Kate surveys the choir. Robert makes his way forward. Kate notices him. She stops singing as she and Robert swap a look across the crowd. Robert's lips part slightly. Lily smiles as she faces forward. Robert peers down, lost in thought, then opens his mouth to sing. Kate holds his gaze as she half sings. Bows her head. Licking his lips, Robert approaches Kate. She moves closer, averting her gaze. They stop a few feet apart and meet eye to eye.
I'm sorry about your friend.
Me too.
As Lily watches her parents, the carolers walk on. Jake comes up beside Robert and faces Kate.
Is this your husband, ma'am?
Yes.
Well, I sure do appreciate everything Mr. Layton has done for us. You know, he's been burning the midnight oil, and that's hard. But we'd be lost without him. Your husband has given us hope this Christmas.
Jake nods to Robert and walks off with his hat in his hand. As Robert turns to Kate, she bows her head.
What happened to you tonight?
Well, I went to Wilson's to pick up the doll, and they'd sold it, of course, and then...
Robert stares off open-mouthed.
I met this boy.
As he faces Kate, she lifts her gaze.
Do you know how much I love you?
No.
You and Lily.
He eyes their daughter, who sadly gazes off.
And I want you to teach. You were born to teach. And I don't care about getting the house. I don't care if you go back to school. I don't care about any of it. I've been so stupid. I just want to make you happy.
Kate grins, fighting back tears.
Forgive me.
Smiling, she caresses Robert's cheek.
I already have.
He stares soberly back. Kate draws closer and rests her head on his shoulder. Blinking, he stares off absently. Kate lifts her head, and they gaze toward the Andrews window, where a light shines behind the Venetian blinds. As the light goes out, Kate and Robert face Lily. She shuts her eyes with her head against her father's chest. Her parents turn toward the window again. Kate's gaze lingers upon the Andrews house. Then she rests her head on Robert's shoulder. Robert stands between Kate and Lily with an arm around each. Daytime. Outside McGraw and Hurst, patches of snow dot the sidewalk. Inside, Robert and Gwen look over a document.
It's right there.
Robert checks his watch.
No. Good.
He gets up.
Where are you going? It's only 3:30.
Lily's got a basketball game.
All right, coach. You go get him.
Okay.
Gwen leaves and Robert eyes his bookcase. From a shelf, he pulls down his mother's brown paper-wrapped package. He unwraps it, revealing his childhood lunchbox. He gazes off quizzically, then tosses the paper aside. Grinning, he sinks into a swivel chair. He flips the latch on the box and lifts the lid, revealing an envelope inside. Robert blinks as he picks up the envelope with his name written on the front. He turns it over and pulls a paper from it. The letterhead at the top reads, Ellen G. Layton.
Dear Robert, I've been thinking about when you were a boy. You had so much passion for everything. You used to talk about the great things you would do when you grew up.
At the auto shop, Nathan follows a puppy toward Jack.
No matter what difficulty you may face, God will be there. It may be in the sound of Lily's singing or Kate's laughter.
Now in the cemetery, the older Robert reads the letter.
But if you listen, you'll hear it.
Nearby, the younger man crouches beside another grave.
I miss you, Mom.
Robert stares down, blinking.
Kate's doing great. So's Lily.
The young man traces his finger across the inscription.
You'd be proud.
Robert nods. Standing, he gazes down. The younger man, wearing a Red Sox cap, faces him.
You're the first person I've seen here on Christmas Day in years.
I was thinking the same thing.
Well, I gotta go. Hit the books.
You in college?
Medical school.
Oh.
Merry Christmas.
You too.
They wave, then the student walks off.
Nice cap.
The young man faces him.
Thanks.
As he heads off again, Robert watches him go. Facing Ellen's grave, he kisses his hand, then touches the stone.
If we're open to it, the smallest of miracles can change our lives.
Robert walks off.
A laughing child.
He stops at another gravestone.
Pot roast dinner. A car that needs fixing.
Robert approaches.
Even a pair of shoes.
The red shoes lie before the gravestone, which reads Andrews. He brushes away snow, revealing the name Maggie Elizabeth.
Hey!
As Robert stands, a gray sedan pulls out. Robert watches it go. Lowering his gaze, a slow smile spreads across his face. He gazes absently toward the snow, then into the distance. Standing among a line of gravestones, Robert half turns and takes a look behind him. Wrapping his coat around his body, he walks past a weathered stone statue of an angel. Fade to black.